Rafer.
Yes, Kristen.
It's the most magical time of the year.
It is. The wondrous time.
It is. Do you have silver bells in your heart? Or are you a Grinch?
You know me, Kristen. I am a little bit of a Grinch. I don't necessarily want to steal Christmas from everybody else, but I don't want to be forced into, you know, having ruddy cheeks and a big giant smile if I'm not in the mood. That's how I am.
Well, that sounds a little bit Grinchy to me.
It's a little Grinchy. My heart is three sizes too small. Or two sizes or whatever it is.
Oh, you've said it before. Scratch a cynic and underneath you'll find a...
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
But you know what? I'm not going to let you bring me down. It's not going to happen because you know what I do every year at this time.
Yes. Tell the listeners.
Okay. So between Thanksgiving and New Year's, I try to watch an average of one Christmas movie a day.
It's like your Advent Christmas VCR.
I love it. I love every minute of it.
And it's amazing.
And it doesn't matter if it's a crappy made-for-TV Lifetime movie. No offense to Lifetime, I love you. Or if it's an old Bass and Rankin.
Uh-huh, Rankin Bass, yep. Yeah, sure, the old claymation, yeah. puppet animation specials, which I love.
Yes, anything from that all the way to, like, the latest modern BET Christmas, you know, offering anything.
Wow.
I don't care what it
is. That's deep catalog.
I will watch anything. And of course, the classics. I watch it all. I love it.
Sure.
I love it. And so what we're going to do today, and I'm dragging you into this, whether you
want. I know, this was your idea. This was your idea, Kristen.
We're going to talk about our very favorite Christmas movies.
I actually do have some.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had to look those up on some list, didn't you?
I stole them from some Amazon list maker. I'll pretend as though I love them.
All right, but before we do that, let's introduce ourselves. I am the very festive and jolly Kristen Meinzer, producer for The Takeaway.
And I am Rafer Guzman, the famously grouchy movie critic from Newsday. And this is Movie Date.
Well, Rafer,
yes.
I am thrilled with our subject today. I am so excited that we get to talk about Christmas movies.
It is kind of exciting, I have to admit. It's fun. It's fun to talk about these movies.
I love talking about Christmas movies. In their own way, they become their own sort of cultural family tradition.
Yes.
Christmas movies, in much the same way that eating certain foods or, you know, making cookies for Santa sort of become tradition.
Yes, yes,
so,
I agree.
Yeah. So, do you want to start off talking about all the awesome movies you love most at Christmas time?
Okay. I will start off. Let's do this in ascending order. So we'll save our best for last.
Okay.
How's that? Okay.
Yep,
so
great.
I'll start off with one that, and again, some of these I want to say they are not maybe technically Christmas movies, but I feel that they have a Christmassy spirit, and they have sort of a holiday spirit to me. So this one,
I don't know, Rafer.
No, I think you'll agree. I think you will agree. So I'll start off with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. From 1987,
Look
the John
at you
Hughes
go.
Movie, right?
Yeah.
So now it's Thanksgiving, right? It's over the Thanksgiving holiday, but I feel like that's pretty Christmassy, right?
You're
especially
stretching
since
it a little
you
bit.
You think I'm stretching it a little bit? Well, then you're gonna hate my number one film
because it's all about Arbor Day. I know, we've discussed this.
That's right. No, but don't you feel that? I mean, you know. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you know, if for those who don't know it, it's Steve Martin, John Candy, a John Hughes classic. One of the first movies that John Hughes did that was not a teen flick that kind of, you know, brought him into the adult world. And Steve Martin plays, I can't remember what his character does. He's some kind of an insurance executive or some sort of, you know, business guy. John Candy is a shower curtain ring salesman, as I remember. They wind up getting thrown together on a plane trip. They're trying to just take a very short hop from, I think it's New York to Chicago. They're trying to take a very short little commuter flight, and of course, everything goes wrong, and they wind up getting thrown together trying to make it home for the holidays and driving each other insane. And of course, as everything progresses, and, you know, John Candy is this irritating, talkative, yakky, annoying, you know, sort of guy. And they drive each other crazy, and John Candy keeps doing things like setting their rental car on fire and, you know, all these
putting
irritating
his hands
things.
Between his buttocks.
My hands between a pillow. That's not a pillow! Yes, the class, yes. So, you know, always a little bit of homophobia in there. But I love that movie for one reason, and that is John Candy. And most movies, I think, try to do this odd couple thing where the one guy is the buttoned-up, straight-laced guy, that's Steve Martin. The other guy is the wild, wacky, you know, frustrating guy, that's John Candy. Most of the time, that doesn't work for me, and I just find the irritating guy really irritating. And I just, like, for instance, not really a remake, but Due Date with Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis, essentially the same film. I just found Zach Galifianakis really irritating in that film. I found his character annoying. But John Candy, somehow, even though he is setting the rental car on fire through his own stupidity, somehow manages to be really endearing, and your heart just goes out to him. And when, at the end, they kind of finally come together and Steve Martin, I won't spoil it, but Steve Martin kind of embraces him into his life, I find it a really endearing, touching moment. I find that really moving, and that's the reason I love that movie.
I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through.
What?
I am adding this to my Christmas watching
list. Oh, you've got to. First of all, it's great, great, funny dialogue, great moments. And John Candy gives a great performance in that movie.
Oh, the late John Candy.
I know. I know. God bless him.
Yeah.
All right. You?
All right. Well, this was hard for me, as you know, Rafer, because I have about 100 movies at Christmas time I just love. I narrowed it down to a top 7. And I'm just going to start randomly picking items off this top 7 list.
Okay.
I'm going to start with The Shop Around the Corner, starring Jimmy Stewart. Did you ever see that?
I don't think I have.
There's these two retail workers.
Mm-hmm.
They are in Eastern Europe, I think Prague maybe.
Oh.
And it's the 1930s, I think, is when the movie is supposed to be taking place. Mm-hmm. During a time when the singles ads were still in the paper.
Oh.
And it's the basis for the movie You've Got Mail.
It was the first thing I was thinking.
Only it's phenomenally good. Unlike You've Got Mail, which is awful.
Yes.
It's got the very charming Jimmy Stewart. And it has this couple interacting every day because they work in retail during the worst possible time, during the Christmas shopping season in the 1930s.
Right.
The place is constantly bustling. It's a fantastic cast of characters because you have, instead of a family, the family is made up of all the co-workers, all of them with their weird quirks, the boss, the drunk. You have everybody at the office that you just love.
Right.
And then in the end, well, I don't want to ruin it. Let's just say there's love and holiday magic in there. And all through this thing where you watching it from the outside know what's happening, but the characters on the inside don't really. And you'll laugh, and it's adorable, and Jimmy Stewart's my fake boyfriend. I love him.
Oh, Jimmy Stewart's the greatest.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I kid you not, it's also a weepy. You will cry, too.
Oh, sure, sure.
It's so good. Well, Jimmy Stewart. Yeah,
Jimmy Stewart's
gonna make you cry.
Yeah, you're going to weep at least once.
So I'm going to say The Shop Around the Corner stuff. All right. Right up there towards the top on my list.
All right, okay. I'll mark that down. All right, I'll go next with another one. Again, people probably don't think of this usually as a Christmas movie, but it is set during Christmas break. Metropolitan from 1990. Have you seen it? I knew you were going to say that, Kristen. Oh,
I just hate it.
Tell me why.
Well, you know, let's just look at all these rich people being rich. It's so hard sometimes to find your place when you're rich, but all your other rich friends who are also rich. I mean, how are you? Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. That's all right. Listen.
Let's hear about why you think this is an awesome Christmas movie.
It's a polarizing film. It definitely was. The critics all loved it. I think a lot of people, though, found it, like you, insufferable. The plot, there isn't really much of a plot. It's basically a Princeton kid who is from a kind of lower middle class family in Manhattan who winds up on Christmas break hanging out with a bunch of other Ivy Leaguers who are actually from sort of real upper crust New York society, and they kind of welcome him in, and he gets to know them and, you know, kind of falls in love with one of the girls, Audrey. I will just admit that as a Californian striver who really wanted to desperately be part of New York, this movie just hit me where it counted, and I just found it magical and charming and funny. And viewers, if you could see Kristen's face right now. Listeners, I mean. Listeners. Well, anyway, I love the movie. I find it really endearing. And although you can clearly say that, you know, it's difficult to care for some people about a bunch of Ivy League people who are probably going to go on to, you know, make millions of dollars and rule the world, I do find this a really great little snapshot of youth, kind of on the brink of adulthood. The world is filled with promise. It's very romantic. And there's a real sense of, I don't know, just kind of bonhomie among the characters,
know?
Listen and they just, it's true. And I have to say, I just love Chris Eigenman as Nick, who is this kind of Fitzgeraldian character.
God.
I love him. And I love the dialogue. I think it's funny. I like the backstory. It's based on Whit Stillman, the writer-director. It's based on his kind of real-life experience. It was in D.C. for him, but this idea of just sort of falling in with this crowd of people that he was just kind of utterly charmed by and impressed by and just sort of wanted to be a part of, that was kind of my college experience too. And I love that movie for that reason. And I'll always love that movie. And it's Christmassy. It's wintry and it's New York-y.
Oh, good for you. I'm glad you were able to come up with a movie. You know, I have to say that, am I allowed to do this, Rafer? Am I allowed to have ties?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. I've decided that for my second place Christmas movie, I'm going to have a tie between two that I consider classics, modern classics.
Mm-hmm.
Elf and A Christmas Story.
Ah, okay, yes.
I think
yes.
They're both fantastic modern classics. I guess Christmas Story might not be considered modern anymore.
Not so modern anymore, but I know what you're saying, as opposed to Miracle on 34th Street
exactly,
and such.
Exactly, exactly,
right.
Exactly. It's not The Shop Around the Corner. These are full-color movies. Christmas
right.
Story is looking back at another time. I think, again, the 1930s
That's
or 40s.
Right. Probably, I would have thought 40s or 50s maybe, but I could be wrong.
Sometime back in our American nostalgia,
yes,
our collective past. And
back when America was still America.
And I never get tired of watching it. You know how TBS shows it 24 hours a day for three days straight in the days leading up to Christmas? I will sit there for 6 hours.
You will.
And I'll just stare at the TV.
It's
Red Ryder BB
gun, funny movie.
The leg lamp.
Sure.
The whole movie, any moment in that movie will get me to sit down, stare, and laugh, and laugh, and laugh, and be so happy about this dysfunctional, weird family with the yelling dad.
Yes.
And the
nonsensical cursing dad.
The little brother who doesn't really talk and is like or eat or anything. It's just, and yet it's so sweet and adorable and somehow taps into that Norman Rockwell part of all of us.
Yes.
That's just great.
And then there's also a running gag about the Christmas story in the new Harold and Kumar movie. Do you remember? The tongue on the pole.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Scene, right?
Oh,
which
God.
They, of course, turn into something far more obscene.
Yes, they sure do.
But I mean, I feel like you're in good company. I think everyone really loves that movie.
It's
a really great movie.
It's so good. But I think this is going to outrage some people. To me, it's tied with Elf.
People really like Elf.
Do they?
Yeah, I think Elf has gotten a real following since its release. Yeah.
Oh, good. Because I remember the minute I saw it, I thought, this is going to go down in history as the next modern Christmas classic. That people are going to someday, you know, our children's children someday will be watching TBS for 3 days straight, and it'll be Elf.
Right.
It'll just be nothing but Elf for 3 days straight
right.
because it's that good.
Yeah.
Again, it taps into this magical idea of you want to believe, but for modern audiences has a fair dose of cynicism through James Caan.
That's right. James Caan. Yeah.
James Caan. Yes. And it's just sweet and magical, and it pays tribute to Christmas movies while poking fun at them at the
mm-hmm.
same time,
mm-hmm.
but poking fun in a nice way,
mm-hmm.
not being too mean.
Also New York-y, right?
Very
Elf?
New York-y.
Yeah.
New York Christmas movies are some of the best Christmas movies.
Oh, I totally agree. I always like the Santa Claus telling Will Ferrell, New York's a very strange place. There are 12 pizzerias named the Original Ray's, but the real Ray's, and he goes on to explain that. And I always thought, like, I wonder if anyone outside of New York is going to get that joke, but it's a very funny joke.
I don't think a lot of the jokes. No, I'm sure people get most of the jokes, but there are a few that are very, very New York-y.
Yes.
Very New York-y. And just talking about these movies, my face is all lit up.
Are you getting all warm and glowing?
I feel so happy.
Let's get you some brandy.
I'm so good. I'm drinking some right now. No, I'm not.
No, that's not true. Not here.
Eight
not
in
here
the morning.
At the workplace.
No, I'm not doing that. All right, Rafer, what's your number one favorite?
All right, my number one, and I'm sure you're going to argue with me because it does not have anything to do with Christmas. But in fact, it takes place in February, and that's Groundhog Day.
Oh, good. Rafer.
What?
That's not a real holiday. I'm sorry.
Groundhog Day is not a real holiday. But to me, that movie is one of the most – that movie has got the holiday spirit more than almost any movie I can think of. It does take place during sort of winter. So I'm including it. And don't you feel that movie has got that kind of holiday spirit, Kristen? Do you like that movie?
It's fine.
Only fine?
No. You know what? I have to say, as a grown-up, I've come to like the movie.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I did not like the movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
I remember being a kid and going to the theater and seeing it. I just thought it was boring and repetitive and that they didn't do enough to make the repetition actually entertaining. I thought it was mostly irritating, like nails on the chalkboard.
Huh.
But the older I got, the more I actually really came to enjoy it. And I think part of the reason why is because I used to work with this professor at NYU. She's called the Groundhog Day Professor.
Okay.
And she's in the Religious Studies Department.
Ah.
And she's done a lot to analyze this film. Angela Zito, if you're listening, I'm talking about you.
All right.
Yeah. She's actually been on The Takeaway before talking about God and Groundhog Day.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Along with Danny Rubin, the writer.
The writer. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Right. Well, okay. If Christmas is the time where you are supposed to kind of reflect on your life and feel a kind of gratitude for all the people that are around you and be thankful for what you have and gather everyone with you and, you know, spend all this quality time with people, I really feel like Groundhog Day is the movie. If, I mean, for anyone that does not know the premise, it's Bill Murray, who plays a cranky TV news anchor who's sent out to cover this miserable assignment, which is Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and approaches it with a bad attitude and then is forced to spend every February 2nd over and over and over again. Every day he wakes up, it's February 2nd. He has to spend the entire day all over again for the rest of his life until he comes to this kind of epiphany that rather than, you know, sort of rag on your own life and rag on other people and fight it and resist it, you embrace it. You make the most of it. You make the most of that day because it's the only day you have, and you learn to give as much love as you can and enjoy what you can. To me, that's the Christmas message. That's it. And I find that movie just completely not only like moving, but kind of like profound. And I really, that's one of my favorite movies ever. And so wow. I know it's not a Christmas movie. I know it takes place in February, but I still feel like that's going to be my number one.
I have to say that was very moving, the way you were talking about it.
Well, thank you.
If you only have one day, you really have to live it the best way you can.
That's true.
That's where the God and Groundhog Day
sort
of philosophy comes. It's like the Buddhist thing almost.
And very Zen. Yes,
yeah,
exactly. There's at least one article I know that's been written about that as well.
Yeah. Well.
All right. What's your number one, Kristen?
I'm boring and predictable. You know what my number one is.
Maybe.
Guess.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, it is. I'm just crying
about it. That's all right.
I can't help it. I love it so much. I love it. I love it. I love it. Every year I watch it, I bawl and I bawl and I bawl and I laugh out loud and I cheer for them and I get mad. I get so mad. Ugh, why are you still in this town, George Bailey? Get the hell out of this town.
Right.
These people are just using you. Get away from here. And I really do want him to just grab Mary and the kids and escape one night and leave there.
Right.
Go to New York City. Get the I'm sorry, I was about to swear. Get the hell out of Bedford Falls.
Right.
Get out of there.
Right.
They're just using you. But then at the same time, you're like, oh, well, look, this town is
It's his town.
They love you.
Right.
And there's so much, every single time you watch it, there's something different to look at and to analyze and to enjoy. There's an article that came out a few years ago saying that if Bedford Falls actually went the way that George Bailey wanted it to go, it would be dead right now.
But economically?
But Old Man Potter, turning it into an entertainment center with casinos, dance halls, and theaters, it actually would have survived.
It would survive, right,
yeah,
sure. It would become, you know, Mohegan Sun or something.
Yeah, absolutely. But I can't help it. I love it. I cry when poor little George gets beat up by his boss when he's like 13 years old, the delivery boy. Oh, God. And then I laugh and cheer when he and Mary are dancing and fall in the pool. And then, yeah, and who doesn't just love the very end when he realizes the whole town really needs him and loves him?
Right, right. Oh, yeah. Again, he gathers everybody around him at the end, right? There's that tearful scene. I mean, that film will get you. No doubt about it.
It's so good. It's so, so good.
No,
so
I think, you know, that may be predictable, but I feel like that's just, it's a completely defensible choice.
Yeah. It's also a miserable life. It's like Groundhog Day, because what it's saying is you have to love others and live your life to the fullest, whatever terrible hellhole you're trapped in.
Exactly.
Just do the best you can, you know?
Exactly.
You just need to love and let yourself be loved.
I agree.
That's it. All right. So, you know, I think that it's important, though, also because there are lots of terrible, terrible Christmas movies out there.
That's true.
To talk about the very worst holiday movies. And let's each pick one.
All right. I can think of one off the top of my head. I don't know if this necessarily counts as the worst one, but it's a recent example that I thought was really bad, which was Disney's A Christmas Carol, the motion capture version with Jim Carrey.
Oh, I couldn't even watch it. You know I don't like that.
Yeah. It's really... And the story of Christmas Carol I really find so moving. It's such a great story. In fact, I was reading a kind of an abridged version to my 4-year-old not long ago, and he was really into it, and I was really into it, and I love that story. But man, that motion capture stuff on from Bob Zemeckis is so distracting and weird and creepy. And I also have to say, Jim Carrey, when he's doing his comedic Jim Carrey, I think his serious Jim Carrey is quite good. When he's comedic Jim Carrey, he already looks like a motion capture animation figure to me. And so done up in this weird way with that weird animation, that kind of strange dead eye effect where you can't quite tell where he's looking or what he's looking at, I just found the whole thing very creepy and very unpleasant to look at. And that made me sad because I love that story so much.
Oh, it just makes my skin crawl thinking about it. I hate it so much. All right, so the worst on my list, and I'm just saying this because the movie I tried to watch last night for my movie a day project was The Santa Claus.
Oh, is that with Tim Allen?
Yes.
Yes.
It's so unbearable.
I'm not sure what you were expecting.
It's just the most awful movie. Somehow he has to take over duties for Santa Claus after accidentally, killing Santa, I believe.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
I think he accidentally kills Santa at the beginning or maims him in some terrible way and then has to take over his duties so that Christmas can still happen.
Right.
And I can't think of anything good about this movie at all. There's absolutely not a single thing good about it. And year after year, I try to force myself to watch it because I think it's part of the modern canon of Christmas movies.
Yeah, it kind of is, yeah.
But I can never make it through more than about 45 minutes.
Wow.
I just cannot stand this movie.
I'm impressed that you even try, Kristen, I have to say.
I try to do every Christmas movie I can.
That's the Christmas spirit right there, trying to sit through that movie.
You know, you just got to try to love. And you let yourself be
you try to
just
love
enjoy,
and embrace.
Just try to embrace it all. That's it.
That's it.
So when you think of Christmas movies, would you say good date or bad date?
Well, I don't know. It depends. We've had some conflicting ideas. I certainly wouldn't want to sit with you through Metropolitan, Kristen.
Oh, well, hopefully you'll never have to.
But
or I should say, hopefully I'll never
hopefully
have
you'll
to.
You'll never have to.
Yeah, hopefully not.
But I'll join you for Elf. I'm not going to sing. I'm not going to sing. Did you know that you can follow Movie Date on Twitter and Facebook? You can also give us feedback on the podcast and tell us what movies you want us to see next.
Log on to themoviedate.org to find out more. And thanks so much for listening.